Would you be seated, please? I should think that in Jesus' mind, the day of his baptism would have qualified as a good day. One of those days when we retire with a sense of euphoria, a bit weary perhaps, but altogether convinced that life and God and even we ourselves are good and at peace. After all, Jesus has heard a voice from heaven itself. You are my beloved Son. With you I am well pleased. These are, we reason, unassailable credentials. Given this kind of love and assurance, how could Jesus not have acceded to his messianic vocation? Only, if it is true that God really approved of Jesus and loved him, he certainly had a strange way of showing it. For no sooner has Jesus been granted this clarity of vision than he is thrust into darkness. The very Spirit which has descended upon him one moment, marking him as the divine Son of God, in the very next moment has driven him out into the wilderness. Thou art my beloved Son, with thee I am well pleased. The Spirit immediately drove him into the wilderness. Just like that. Thought the betrayal of Judas was less abrupt. Now, it is not, after all, as if Jesus decided for himself that having committed himself to such a high vocation, it would be a good idea if he went off on retreat for a while. It's not as if he voluntarily set himself to a 40-day period of fasting, almsgiving, and prayer, a sort of proto-Lent. Jesus did not choose the wilderness. The wilderness chose him. The Spirit drove him there. That is to say, the hand of God is in this experience. And that is something we may not like to hear, because it means that God is not necessarily an innocent bystander in our own times of wilderness. It means, in fact, that God may have great expectations for the very times we find the most difficult, for the very times we expect the least of ourselves. God expects the most. It may even mean that God has willed them. Now, to be honest, this is an insight that I would rather not have to deal with. It does not take long to discover the dangers of this sort of thinking gone wild, because at its worst, one arrives at a theology which reduces us to victims of the mysteriously mean whims of a capricious God. In effect, we court fatalism. So, for instance, well, my mother dropped me on the head when I was 3 days old, and I can't help the way I am, so it was God's will. Or, it didn't rain in Sudan this year. We can't help it if there's a famine and people are dying. If God didn't want to send rain, that's God's business. We must never forget that Jesus himself was no passive acquiescent to physical and emotional assaults. When Jesus found himself in the wilderness, he resisted the evil about him with all his God-given might. And it was God-given, and it was God-given for this purpose. You see, though, that to say that God might actually approve some of the rough patches in our lives is to set before us a theological tightrope it would be easier not to have to tread. And yet, I have to admit that I recognize the pattern of Jesus' experience in my own life. Who among us has not experienced letdown after exhilaration? Who does not know what it is to succumb to grave doubts only hours after having settled on a clear decision? I think of a friend who was ordained several years ago. After years of preparation and discernment and anticipation, and the service itself was a glorious affair, a true celebration. And after the reception, he came home and he sat down on the curb outside his house and he put his head in his hands and he said, "What did I go and do that for?" Similarly, it is a pastoral commonplace that people who have been newly converted or reconverted to the Christian way will very shortly afterwards experience a kind of aridity, leaving them to doubt all of that first sense of assurance. We know exactly what it is to believe ourselves the beloved children of God and then to be thrust into a wilderness not of our own making. Much as I should like to disbelieve Mark's implication that God himself approves the wilderness, I have to admit that sometimes at least life bears him out. Which brings us to Lent. Every year, we observe the first Sunday of Lent with some account of Jesus' sojourn in the wilderness. So the compilers of the lectionary are obviously trying to suggest something about the nature of this season before us. And it is true that Lent has customarily, at least for Anglicans, been something of our wilderness season. It has been a time for leaving go festivities and fat extravagances, a time for solemnity and simplicity. But there is, I suggest, an important difference between this and the picture that Mark gives us. For whereas the wilderness chose Jesus, and whereas the wilderness often chooses us, Lent is a time when we are given the high privilege of choosing our own wilderness. The church gives into our hand the luxury of choosing that austerity, if you will, that will most help us to grow in grace. It is fair to ask why anyone would want to make such a choice. Why should we bother to choose a wilderness when God will doubtless send us one? Well, there are two reasons. The first is precisely because we can expect to be thrown all unawares into the wilderness someday. To choose it for ourselves, with our wits about us, is a matter of placing ourselves in training. Those, for example, who have learned the discipline of prayer, who have had long experience with both the presence and the absence of God, if one could call it this without being misunderstood, such people will manage far better when life deals them a blow which throws the very existence of God into question. Lent is a time for placing ourselves under discipline, for choosing a wilderness, that we might be equipped for the journey when the wilderness chooses us. But secondly, to choose the wilderness is to opt for unadulterated immersion in the basics. Jesus Christ was born in a rude and humble manger, and he died on a rough and hard cross. That is to say, both the incarnation and the crucifixion, fundamental not only to what Christians believe, but to how we see and we live our lives. These two events were wrought by God where? In the wilderness. And if we wish to encounter the incarnate and crucified Lord, it seems to me that we shall have to venture for a time, 40 days would do, into the selfsame wilderness. Lent is a time for choosing the wilderness because in the last analysis, the wilderness is where God is. And so, in a sense, we come full circle. If God is in the wilderness, then perhaps it is not so unthinkable that he should drive us there. Nor is it unthinkable that we should choose to go there. Nor is it unthinkable that we should continue to believe ourselves his beloved with children with whom he is, at least sometimes, well pleased.